Welcome to SCOTUScast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Thank you for joining us for this post-decision episode of SCOTUScast, District Cracking and Packing Edition. I'm your host, Bridget Flaherty. On June 18, 2018, the Supreme Court decided Gill v. Whitford, a case considering claims of partisan gerrymandering. In Wisconsin's 2010 elections, Republicans won the governorship and acquired control of the state Senate. In 2011, pursuant to the state constitution's requirement that the legislature must redraw the boundaries of its districts following each census, the Wisconsin legislature adopted a redistricting plan, Act 43, for state legislative districts. With Act 43 in effect, Republicans expanded their legislative control in subsequent elections, reportedly winning 60 of 99 seats in the state assembly with 48.6% of the statewide two-party vote in 2012, and 63 of 99 seats with 52% of the statewide two-party vote in 2014. In 2015, 12 Wisconsin voters sued in federal court, alleging that Act 43 constituted a statewide partisan gerrymander in violation of the First and 14th Amendments to the U.S. Constitution. Defendants' motions to dismiss and for summary judgment were denied, and following trial, a divided three-judge district court panel invalidated Act 43 statewide. Act 43, the majority concluded, impermissibly burdened the representational rights of Democratic voters by impeding their ability to translate their votes into legislative seats, even when Republicans were in an electoral minority. The court enjoined further use of Act 43 and ordered that a remedial redistricting plan be enacted, but the United States Supreme Court stayed that judgment pending resolution of this appeal. By a vote of 9-0, the U.S. Supreme Court vacated the judgment of the district court and remanded the case for a new trial. In an opinion delivered by Chief Justice Roberts, the court held that the plaintiffs, Wisconsin Democratic voters who rested their claim of unconstitutional partisan gerrymandering on statewide injury, had failed to demonstrate Article III standing. Chief Justice Roberts delivered the opinion of the court, in which Justices Kennedy, Ginsburg, Breyer, Alito, Sotomayor, and Kagan joined. Justices Thomas and Gorsuch joined, except as to Part 3. Justice Kagan filed a concurring opinion, in which Justices Ginsburg, Breyer, and Sotomayor joined. Justice Thomas filed an opinion concurring in part and concurring in the judgment, which was joined by Justice Gorsuch. And now, to discuss the case, we have David Casaza, associate at Gibson Dunn.
Let's start by just saying, what is gerrymandering? So every 10 years, the government conducts a census, and states then redraw the district maps for state legislatures and for the House of Representatives. In most states, this is a political process, and the redrawing is done by the state legislature itself. This can lead to either actual or allegations of abuse. Namely, that the majority party has drawn the map in such a way that its members will be reelected and members of the opposing party will not be reelected. How do you accomplish this? Well, the two gerrymandering terms are packing and cracking. Packing takes place when the majority party takes minority party voters that are spread out and puts them all together in one district by drawing a district to reach out and wrap around all of them. That way, that one district is overwhelmingly won by minority party voters, and all of the neighboring districts go to the majority party. Cracking is the opposite approach. You take an area that is dense in minority party voters, and you break that dense area up over a number of different districts, spreading the minority party votes out and making sure that all of the districts are won by the majority party. Gerrymandering, and partisan gerrymandering in particular, is nothing new. In fact, the most famous gerrymander in American history probably came in 1812, when Elbridge Gerry, who was the governor of Massachusetts, drew a district map for the state Senate that allowed his party to win three-quarters of the state Senate seats with less than half of the statewide vote. One of the state Senate districts was so oddly shaped that his opponents accused him of having drawn a salamander. Salamander plus his last name, Gerry, gives us gerrymandering. So gerrymandering is as old as the American Republic, but review of redistricting by federal courts is a much more recent development. It was only in the early 1960s that the Supreme Court decided that courts had power to review the redistricting process and district maps. That was in a case called Baker versus Carr, and it wasn't about partisan or racial gerrymandering, it was actually about equal population. In a follow-on case, Reynolds versus Sims, the Supreme Court held that congressional districts had to have roughly equal populations in them. So you can't have one district with 100,000 people and a neighboring district with 500,000 people. Later in the 1960s, the Federal Voting Rights Act and the 14th Amendment were both interpreted to forbid racial gerrymandering. You can't draw a district map to systematically favor voters of one race over voters of another race. Partisan gerrymandering has been much less clear. There's no consensus on whether it's constitutional or unconstitutional, and what role federal courts should have, if any, in policing the practice. In the 60s and 70s, the Supreme Court issued decisions in a handful of partisan gerrymandering cases, but without really thoroughly explaining what it was doing. It wasn't until 1986, in a case called Davis versus Bandemer, that the Supreme Court thoroughly approached the question for the first time. Unfortunately, the result was a lot of fractured opinions, there was no clear majority, the implication was that partisan gerrymandering could be unconstitutional, but it wasn't clear what part of the Constitution it violated, it wasn't clear how you would tell a permissible district map from an impermissible district map, and the particular map that was challenged in that case, a majority of the Supreme Court said, was fine. So very little guidance from that decision. In 2004, the Supreme Court tried again in a case called Veith versus Jubilier. This was a challenge to a Pennsylvania congressional map. Four justices, for the plurality, said that partisan gerrymandering was something federal courts had no power to review. There was no claim, there's nothing to do here, it's just not within the court's power. Justice Kennedy said he didn't think that this was an impermissible gerrymander, and he also didn't think that there was a clear test yet for deciding what was and what was not a permissible district map, but he wasn't giving up hope, and he thought in the future there might be some test developed. So the outcome in that case was, again, no clear rule, and again, the particular challenge map was upheld. Gill versus Whitford seemed to most people to be an opportunity for the Supreme Court to try and resolve a lot of the confusion and lack of clarity from these earlier decisions. This case is a challenge to the maps for the Wisconsin state legislature, that is the state house and the state senate, that were drawn in 2011 after the 2010 census. As you may remember, 2010 was also a very good year for the Republican Party, and the maps drawn in 2011 were drawn by a Republican majority state legislature and approved by the Republican governor of Wisconsin. Shortly after the maps were put into place, a handful of plaintiffs who were Democrats brought this lawsuit saying that the statewide map was an unconstitutional partisan gerrymander. The plaintiffs argued both First Amendment and 14th Amendment claims, both that the map infringed on their right of association under the First Amendment and their right of equal protection under the 14th Amendment. The district court agreed with them and struck down the maps as an unconstitutional partisan gerrymander. That brings the case up to the Supreme Court. This was argued very early in the term and was only decided toward the very end of the term, along with a second partisan gerrymandering case, Benesek versus Lamone. Now, neither this case, Gill, nor Benesek answered the ultimate question of whether federal courts can review allegations of partisan gerrymandering, and if they can, what standard they should use. Instead, Gill gave us a surprisingly unanimous ruling on standing. Standing is judicial doctrine about who has the ability to bring a lawsuit. The general theory is that you can only bring a lawsuit in court if you're injured by the activity that you're challenging. So in this case, the Supreme Court said, the plaintiffs here have not shown that they particularly are injured by the district maps. Usually, in a redistricting case, the injury alleged is vote dilution. That is, either by being packed in with voters of the same party as me, or being spread out apart from all of the other voters in my party, my vote is less impactful than it should have been. because the map itself has denied me the opportunity to cast a meaningful vote. The plaintiffs, surprisingly, didn't argue that theory of injury. Instead, they argued, and the district court agreed, that the maps reduced their opportunity to be represented by Democratic legislatures across the state. That is, not my particular district, I can't elect a Democrat, but rather that statewide, I can't support a Democratic majority in the legislature. The Supreme Court's decision was that this was not a judicially cognizable injury. The Supreme Court said this statewide collective injury is just an undifferentiated, generalized grievance about government. It's the sort of thing that anyone could say, and that doesn't impact one voter, one plaintiff in particular, so it's not the proper subject of a lawsuit. The court, through the opinion of the Chief Justice, said that the person's right to vote is individual and personal in nature, and the injury of vote dilution, therefore, must be district-specific. So a plaintiff can come into court saying, the boundaries of my district have injured me because they have diluted my ability to vote effectively. A plaintiff can't come into court to complain about the boundaries of a district in which they don't live and in which they cannot vote merely because of the impact that district will have on the majority party in the legislature. So the basic outcome in Gill is you have to challenge district by district, and you have to have plaintiffs from each district to introduce specific evidence about the injury they have suffered. The only district-specific testimony in Gill was by the named plaintiff, Whitford, and he agreed in his testimony in court that under the legislature's plan, his district was about 82% Democratic, and under the plan proposed by the plaintiffs, the district was about 82% Democratic. So he had no particularized grievance about the boundaries of his district, and the plaintiffs just failed to introduce evidence about the districts that other plaintiffs lived in, and they failed to recruit plaintiffs from each district across the state. Unusually, though, rather than dismiss the case as a whole, the Supreme Court sent it back to the district court, so the plaintiffs will have a chance, probably, to add new plaintiffs if they want to, and introduce new evidence suggesting that they have suffered a specific vote dilution injury in each challenged district. Although the Chief Justice's opinion was joined by all of the other members of the court, there were two separate concurrences. Justice Thomas, joined by Justice Gorsuch, wrote separately, very briefly, just to note that he felt the case should be dismissed. Usually, when a court concludes there is no standing, the case as a whole is over. Case dismissed, closed. This case, instead, was sent back to the district court, and Justices Thomas and Gorsuch disagreed with that outcome. Now, the much more lengthy concurrence was authored by Justice Kagan and joined by the other members of the court's liberal wing, Justices Ginsburg, Breyer, and Sotomayor. Justice Kagan's opinion was a lengthy explanation of how the plaintiffs could reshape their case to argue a different First Amendment injury that she thought first would allow them to proceed with the lawsuit, and second would allow them to bring a statewide rather than a district-by-district challenge. Justice Kagan argued that the best lens was a First Amendment lens based around association. Specifically, that having a map that systematically favored Republicans diminished the ability of Democrats to effectively associate. If Democrats knew they were going to lose elections, it becomes much harder for them to fundraise, recruit candidates, turn out volunteers, or get support from independent voters. She also suggested that a more effective plaintiff would be party officials or the party itself rather than just individual voters. Now, the First Amendment lens is unusual. None of the court's prior gerrymandering or redistricting cases have focused on the First Amendment. Instead, it's only appeared in a few of Justice Kennedy's concurrences, in Veith, in another opinion, Lulac, about Texas's districts. And it was expected that the First Amendment might be a way for the court's liberals to bring Justice Kennedy over. The concurrence in Gill reads very much like an effort to suggest to the plaintiffs how they can reframe the case in an attempt to get Justice Kennedy's vote in the future. Of course, Justice Kennedy announced his retirement shortly after the opinion in Gill v. Whitford was released, and it's not clear that there's much appetite from any of the other justices to explore this First Amendment injury. So where does the outcome in Gill leave us? Well, Although it didn't close the door entirely on partisan gerrymandering litigation, the Chief Justice's opinion does make it much more difficult to bring these cases in the future. Because the court held that injuries are district-specific, it also strongly suggested that the remedy must be district-specific. So if you want to redraw an entire statewide map, plaintiffs' groups will have to recruit a plaintiff from every district in the state, or from enough districts that it's not possible to redraw the map without redrawing the whole map. Second, there's going to be a higher threshold of proof to show packing or cracking and the related vote dilution in each district. The type of statewide statistics that were the basis for this litigation, particularly a new statistic called the efficiency gap, that was an effort to measure the number of wasted votes for each party statewide, just aren't going to be effective, because the efficiency gap, as the Chief Justice's opinion points out, doesn't tell you anything about a specific district. It's purely a statewide statistic. There are a handful of cases that could come before the Supreme Court in the relatively near future if the Supreme Court is interested in considering partisan gerrymandering again. First, Gill could come back before the Supreme Court. Alternatively, Benisek versus Lamone, the second partisan gerrymandering case, could come back before the Supreme Court. Benisek did present a First Amendment theory, but it too was sent back to the district court on a relatively procedural holding. There's also a case coming out of North Carolina called Rusho. The Supreme Court vacated Rusho in light of Gill, directing it to go back to the district court for reconsideration. And again, it seems like it's going to be a bit of a race between Benisek, Gill, Rusho, and some of the other cases that may be pending below. But there's no guarantee that the Supreme Court will be interested in trying again. The Supreme Court has been struggling to decide partisan gerrymandering cases since the 1980s. The two cases it took this year were thought to be a chance for it to introduce some clarity to the area, but neither produced a clear outcome. As we've seen, Gill narrowed the target for partisan gerrymandering opponents, but it didn't close things off entirely. This, like so many other things, may end up being in the hands of the new addition to the Supreme Court replacing Justice Kennedy. Until then, we'll be left with much of the uncertainty we've had before, although we will now know that partisan gerrymandering cases, like racial gerrymandering cases, have to be brought on a district-specific basis and not a statewide basis.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. SCOTUSCast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers, founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUSCast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's fedsoc.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.